Time for The Gene Shepherd Show.
So, would you please bring out a little pro-American music there?
Hooray! All right, let's go. Da, 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 da. Hooray, hooray, hooray for the good old U.S. of A. Da, 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 da.
All right, now, thank you very much.
Back home again, back home again. Seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still burning bright through the sycamore for me.
It's the 4th of July, you know, coming up. Have you ever seen a firework maniac? I'm not talking about a guy that likes fireworks. I'm talking about a person who is creative with fireworks. I don't mean just blowing up a tin can. You know, I'm going to tell you a story you're just not going to believe because it sounds like a thing right out of a silent movie. You know, the kind of slapstick comedy that you see once in a while, the Laurel and Hardy type comedy. By the way, I think one of the great lines of all time is, I read it now, this is a fine mess you've got us into now, Stanley. That could be applied to almost every politician I know. It could be applied to history. It's a fine mess you've got us in this time. It's 4th of July. It's about 10 o'clock in the morning, see. I've got my little bundle of fireworks. Schwartz has got his little bundle of fireworks. And it's early morning. We're not playing with the firecrackers much yet. You know, we're saving it for later in the day. Once in a while, you'd let one go. Once in a while, you'd throw a torpedo at Bruner, something like that. But you're not really doing much. And Patty Remedy, the most beautiful girl in the entire world, lived two blocks away. And Patty is on the porch. It's 4th of July. It's kind of a gala. The kids are eating ice cream. She's got a couple of her girlfriends over. You know how girls are. They live in this special little world where they sit around and play like they're having babies and all that. But, you know, girls have, you know, the whole doll shtick. Things are different now. I wonder if little girls sit around and they're 6 or 7, they pretend they're taking a pill. So the big difference between little girls and little boys is that little girls generally live in the future in their play. You know, they're always playing house. Not many little boys play house unless they have ulterior motives going. You know, a kid can play daddy. He can play like he's making a martini like daddy does when he comes home. So, you know, so here's Patty Remedy and her friends playing on the porch. Well, we're showing off, me and Schwartz and Flick were throwing firecrackers and all. We go up on the porch, and I take this bunch of Chinese ladyfingers. Have you ever seen them with the fuses that were all entangled? There's about 45 little firecrackers all together. Well, now, ordinarily, I would fire these firecrackers off one at a time. You know, this is the way a normal kid does, you see. But it's Patty Remedy, I'm, you know. So I take this punk. Now, you're going to hear one of the most embarrassing moments I ever had in my life. I remember it like it's tattooed on my soul. I take this punk, and I say, hey, watch this, Patty. Hey, Patty, hey. And I take the punk, and I light the main fuse on this thing, like that. I say, watch this. Whoa, look at my elbow. And I throw it like that, see, and it goes up in the air. It goes pow, pow, pow. And I turn and run, and just as I run, this thing goes pow, and somehow it blew in half. And half of the firecrackers, instead of, you know, just laying there and popping off, half of them flew, and just as I turn, it is a hot day, my shirt tail is hanging out, it lands right on my shirt tail, and it goes, pow, 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 blew my shirt right off my back, ripped it right up, and these girls are laughing, Schwartz is laughing, Flick is laughing, my shirt is blown up, and it was my new shirt, you know, my sports shirt that we got at Penny's, you know, and my mother's bugged, everybody, oh, yeah, it was a terrible moment. You can go from the depths to the heights and back to the depths again. But I want to tell you, I saw a situation. You're not going to believe this because most of the mothers in this area are exceedingly protective of their kids. Yeah, that's a syndrome of the East. You don't find that as you go further west. You find that the protective quotient in a kid's life grows less and less as you go further west, until finally you get all the way out on the west coast and kids are kicked out of the house at the age of 3 months. Get out, burn your living, kid, you know, they kick them out. Very different world. So I'm living in the Midwest, about halfway between the Midwest, you know, halfway between the far west and the Bronx, where, you know, the kid is carried to school sometimes up to the age of 15, see? And, in this world, I'm going to describe to you an incident that you're not going to believe because it sounds like something that comes out of a comic strip. It is a mother incident. Whenever it comes up, and almost invariably when I get on the phone, I talk to my mother around this time of the year, I say, hey, Mom, you remember that time on the porch? And she starts to giggle. She says, nobody would believe that, would they? I say, no, Ma, they wouldn't. Well, here's what happened. All day long, we've been shooting fireworks off. You know what is it, a squib? Ever hear of a squib? Well, a squib is a firecracker that doesn't go off. And that's a fizzle or a squib. You got this firecracker, and somehow it didn't go off. So now, we used to collect them until you'd have maybe a couple of dozen of these babies, in which case you would take these and you would break them open, you know, the little bit, and you would light it, and it would go, the powder would go up. And if it was white powder, it would make a little silver sparkly thing. If it was black powder, it would make a little red flame, go, like that, okay? Well, we're playing around and shooting off our little firecrackers all day. My mother is sitting on a swing. Now, I have, you know, a genuine standard mother who makes potato salad and every 15 minutes keeps saying, be careful now, you're going to burn yourself, or another variation, be careful now, you'll get it in your eye, now watch out. All day long, she's saying this until finally you don't hear it. It's just like a rote. It's like slamming of the screen door. It's like a crickets or something. You don't listen to this. And so all the while, Flick and me and Schwartz and Bruner, my kid brother, were shooting off our little things out in the yard and running around and blowing up cans. And we were having our fun. And my mother's not saying much. Now she is down among the bushes. And she's doing what mothers do when they're playing around with their little rose bushes. She's pulling up weeds and stuff, messing around. And then all of a sudden, she's back up on the porch now. She says, oh, say, kids, you want to see something? We all look. My mother is up on the porch now, and she's got this funny smile on her face. She's going to do something. So I said, what? She said, well, come on up on the porch and watch. I'm going to do something. So Bruno says, okay. And so we troop up on the steps. And here's my mother now on the top step. Got it? She has been walking around the yard collecting squibs. My mother. And she has taken the squibs, and she has very carefully broken each one in half. And she has emptied it out on the steps. She's got about 30 firecrackers. She's emptied the goo out of them, the powder, in a little pile. Now she's got a pile. It's about, looks like a little anthill, see, a little silver and black anthill. She says, now I'm going to show you what we used to do when we were kids. You never think of your mother doing any of this stuff when she was a kid, you know. I'm going to show you what I did when I was a kid. And so with that, she opens up her purse, and she's looking for something. She's going through the purse, and her handkerchiefs are flying out, and powder puffs, and little pins, and junk like that. And she says, now, where is that? She's looking, and the four of us are watching, and we're standing in about a four-foot circle away, watching the scene. It was a silent scene. My old man now, he comes out of the house, see, and he slams the screen down. He says, what's going on? My mother says, I'm going to show them what I used to do when I was a girl. She says, what? What'd you do? She says, well, now you watch. She's looking through her purse. And then she says, oh, here it is. She finds her little package of matches. My mother didn't smoke, and she always kept these little package of matches in case she needed them. And she found them. They're battered. She says, now watch. The match lights. She says, now here's what we used to do when I was a kid. She bends over, takes the match, drops it in the pile of powder. There is a momentary pause, and it goes, boom, pow. My mother stood up and had no eyebrows. Completely gone. She blew two of the curlers out of her hair all the way across the street into Stryker's lawn. You never saw anything like it. I'll tell you, it burnt the petrified egg right off the front of her chenille bathrobe. No eyebrows. And she stood for a minute, and all of us were stunned. You know, there's a blue flash. They were still staggering around in the smoke. And the old man says, what the hell? Is that what you did when you were a kid? What kind of an example is that? And my mother says, well, it went off, didn't it? And her eyebrows are completely gone. And so she's trying to recover, you know, trying to be dignified. And she goes into the house. Bruner turns to me and he says, gee, that's a great mother. All afternoon, there were about 15 of us. Me, Jack Morton, Flick, Schwartz, Bruner, Stanley Roper, B.G., Delbert Bumpus, all of us, about 15 of us, were busily putting our squibs into a Sherwin-Williams paint can, busting them in. We must have had a half a can full of powder. By maybe 5 hours of running up and down the street looking for old fireworks that hadn't gone off, we gathered around in a little knot, all around this thing, all looking down into it, when Bruner says, "Okay, here goes," throws it in. The entire fourth grade went to school later that year with no eyebrows. My mother became a legend. The time she blew her eyebrows right off.
Well, now, here we are. We're at the limelight. Vamped up. That's in the heart of steaming, fetid, passion-ridden Greenwich Village. Now, those of us who are here do not realize that we have risen to a kind of peak of American culture here. This is it. Isn't that scary? We might as well get this thing underway, and it's the 4th of July. As a matter of fact, when I was a kid, right at this very minute, about 10 o'clock, just before midnight of the 4th, July 3rd, there were countless homes filled with guys priming their ammunition. I can remember seeing old man Bruner standing out on the back porch with a pair of 38 horse pistols, just spinning that cartridge, just spinning that cylinder, chum, chum, waiting for midnight. And then the instant midnight would hit, you'd hear a rolling barrage that would begin at the horizon and then boom up against your house and roll off into the distance again. Old man Bruner out there on the back porch, stewed to the gills, with his 38 caliber horse pistols. Have you ever seen a drunk weaving around amid clotheslines and clotheslines hollering, "Happy Fourth!" And everybody in the neighborhood is in the basement under the coal cellar, celebrating the 4th of July. Well, you know, it's a funny thing, but I'm an old 4th of July celebrant. Well, in Indiana, when I was a kid, my old man, about this time of the year, was absolutely out of his head. The 4th of July was his peak day because he was the only guy in the neighborhood who owned and operated, now get this, a fireworks stand. And this was in the Depression, see, when if you could afford two torpedoes and maybe one or two sparklers and one cherry bomb, that was a tremendous celebration. It's all abstract to most of you, I know. But I have worked in a fireworks stand in that heat, that fantastic heat, for 3 and 4 weeks at a stretch on a state highway in Indiana. And all you'd hear is the sound of Chevys going by with bad tappets. And you'd hear the valve springs rattling, and you could hear the natives spitting. Hour after hour in the heat, and I'm standing behind my little counter there. The temperature is 9,000 degrees, and I am surrounded by all the explosives in the Western world. And I'm 12 years old, and my old man had one phrase. He says, "Look, you are going to learn how to make change before you're 21, or you won't be able to sit down till you're 100. And I don't know whether you ever know the experience of being 12 years old and 85 guys have driven up in their Chevys and all the big butter and egg men get out and their cuties are sitting in the car. You know, that was one way in those days of proving your masculinity, was by the amount and the type of fireworks you bought. You could see guys chickening out before your eyes. Oh, yeah. Let me explain what they had. We had about 9 big wooden shelves, see, and all this stuff was displayed on these shelves, and all the way at the top was the stuff that was strictly for Big Daddy. This was the kind of fireworks that King Kong would have bought, you know? All the way up there. I mean, giant things. They carry them out like this, you know? I mean, big cannons that had little wheels on the bottom, you know? Black powder. You could hear them steaming and hissing when they carried them out. And they always had a little instruction thing on the bottom that says, I remember the Excelsior Firework Company. Yeah, that was the outfit. We bought it from Excelsior. That's where I got the word. And at the bottom of every one of the really big bombs, it would say, "The Excelsior Firework Corporation does not take responsibility." And when you bought something like that, man, you didn't have to prove anything. Nothing. And I would be, say, I'm a kid, see, and I'm standing there, cars would pull up, and I could tell right away who was going to buy the big Dago bombs. And for those of you who are out there thinking that I am making a racial remark, I am not. There was a specific kind of firework called the Dago bomb. You ever heard of a Dago bomb? Well, let me tell you what it was. This was a thing that came in about five sizes. There was one like this. This is for moderately delinquent kids. This was an 8-incher, see. Then there was one that was like this. Then there was one that was like this. Then there was one like this. And the last one, you just stood up next to. It was unbelievable. That thing went for $5. Back in the Depression, when the average guy was earning $5 a year. And once in a while, you'd see this Chevy come up. And out would get this guy. And you could see skulking in the Chevy behind him, this little chick, big blue eyes, Indiana-type girl. And out comes Roof. He walks over. He said, I'll look for fireworks. I said, yep, we're standing. We're measuring each other. It's like the bull standing before the toreador. I'm daring him to buy the real stuff. And he secretly wants to buy sparklers. Give me some of them over there. And then I would say in a very loud voice, so that all the rest of the people who were buying would hear, I'd say, oh, you mean lady fingers, huh? He'd say, no, forget that. That ain't what I want. I want one of them. I'd say, oh, number three, Dago Bob. There's a man. I'd take this thing down, and he'd hold it. Are you aware that man has an unbelievable appetite for heavy explosions? There is not one among us who is not excited by it. We can be peaceful people. We can be people who don't believe in war. But let me tell you, when you're fooling around in the bedroom, you know, you're walking around in the kitchen, and all of a sudden, off in the middle distance, kaboom, you cannot fight back the excitement. Well, my old man, my father, was the most dedicated, high-explosive fan I've ever known. In fact, I've always said it's a shame that he passed out of this mortal coil before they invented the A-bomb. He would have loved it. Oh, I remember once in a great while, our house was surrounded by refineries. We had Shell and Sinclair and Phillips 66 out there. It'd be a hot summer afternoon. The old man is sitting in the kitchen with his shirt off, and he's reading the paper. He's got a can of lukewarm beer next to him. My kid brother is under the table whimpering. My mother is over there, you know, and she's stirring the red cabbage, you know. It's Midwest life, you see. When all of a sudden, out of the blue, one of the high test tanks full of aviation gas would go up at Sinclair, a half a mile away. You'd hear this boom. You feel it before you hear it, you know. There's something that hits you in the gut. And the windows go... The old man is on his feet running for the Graham Page to witness the carnage before you even heard the explosion. He just would sense it. He's out on the street. Let's go! And I can remember sitting in the back seat on the way to fires all through my life. And the old man, his eyes shining, and the guys are jumping out of the windows, and the stuff is blowing up, and he's out there cheering, hey, let's go! Well, it was natural that he got himself a firework stand. And so every year, he got to be a real adept at fireworks. Now, perhaps you don't know, since most of us today are fireworks fans. I mean, we watch them go off in the park or at the fair. But are you aware of the fantastic technique that it takes to fire these things off? This is real specialty. And my father became the neighborhood Picasso of fireworks. He was a magnificent firework exploder. And every 4th of July, we'd be selling his stuff, and the stock is getting smaller and smaller, and the cherry bombs are going. I would be watching the shelves, because whatever was left over, that was our family fireworks. Well, you know, it was nip and tuck. You could tell how the Depression was going by just exactly how our stock was going. You know that some guys didn't have more than $4 a year to eat with? But they managed to buy $30 worth of high explosives. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, there was nothing else to do out in the Midwest except blow people up, you know? So after 364 days of just walking around and sweating, you know, along came a legal holiday when it was legal to blow up Anderson's garage. You know, and get away in the darkness. Well, every 4th of July, we'd start selling this stuff, and about the 3rd, you could begin to tell just how our home fireworks were going to be. And the entire neighborhood would wait. We lived in this neighborhood where the average guy worked maybe one day out of the month. And in fact, Bruner, I remember Bruner working his one day out of the month. And when Bruner would work that one day, he wouldn't show up back home for 3 days. He'd stop off at the Bluebird Tavern to celebrate. But the 4th of July was different. We were all Americans. We were all united by this one thing, this hunger for explosives, this peculiar thing called America. And about the 3rd of July, our stock is getting lower. And then July 4th would spring up bright, unbelievably hot. By the way, have you noticed today the only thing they talk about on the radio in respect to the 4th of July is traffic jams? They judge the success of the 4th by the number of guys that get killed in convertibles. Well, in those days, they didn't talk about traffic jams. They just had them. People just lived in their cars month on end, you know, and the steam is coming out of the front. Oh, yeah. And you know, in those days, a guy would buy a car for $20 because nobody, you know, the car, you couldn't get it fixed. Nobody had any money for gas. And so you could get this Rolls Royce for $55. Had bad valve springs and the tappets were shot. And they rolled on through the darkness. And that was July 4th. Millions of cars stretched to the beach. It's noon now. And our stocks are beginning to get real low. It's now 10 o'clock at night. And it's ready for closing time. At exactly 11:30 on the 4th of July, the old man would say, real excited, see, what he did, he would stand in front of his stock so no one could see him. They'd drive up, he'd say, now we're all out of Dago bombs, he's standing. He's like this, you know, he says, no more Roman candles. He's got my mother standing over here like this. And at 11:30, we would take all the stuff and pile it in the back of the Graham Page. We would sometimes have it piled up in the back. The kids would be up on top. You know, it's like cordwood back there. 400 Roman candles. We had skyrockets that weighed 40 pounds. He's got them loaded back there. He's got cherry bombs. And he's got his favorite, the big Dago bombs. 400 pounds of this stuff. And we drive home through the darkness. We would arrive in front of the house. And incidentally, the sky is filled with fireworks. On all sides, skyrockets, you see them in the distance, and Roman candles. And, you know, you'd go down through the darkness, and you'd see little girls standing on a porch, you know, with a sparklers. And then every once in a while, you'd hear the long, wailing scream of a kid who got a hold of one of those hot wires. You remember those red wires? My grandmother was a punk specialist. And I remember her on the porch with punk sticking out of both ears, you know, on her hands. There was a myth that it kept the mosquitoes away. Punk was an early form of pot. And the mosquitoes were hooked on punk like nothing you ever saw in your life. And my grandmother would be standing on the porch surrounded by 18 million mosquitoes, all higher than a kite. Bombed out of their skull, you know, and she's out there, she's... keeps the mosquitoes away, you know. Oh, man, speaking of punk, what radio station is this, gang? Oh, man, punk all the way. New Yorkie, that's where we are, WOR. Well, we'd come home, see, it's 11:30, and you would see the people. You know, nobody wants to admit that he secretly is waiting to be a freeloader in a celebration. And you would see all the people hiding behind the screen doors waiting for my father to get home. They knew he had the fireworks stand. It was a yearly bit, you know. We'd pull up in front of the house. He would start unloading stuff. I'd go, all right, come on, you kids, stand back. This is dangerous stuff. He loved to live right on the edge of disaster, which all our lives we did. I can remember my mother with a broken voice standing next to the icebox. My father's come home with the shining lights of a guy who has just mortgaged our life for another 1,000 years. And she says, Just once, Gene. That was his name. Just once, Gene. One car paid for. The old man said, oh, this is the last one. We'll get this. This is what I've been wanting. So we always lived on the edge of financial, psychological, and physical disaster. So he's unloading this stuff. And you could see the neighbors coming out on the porch. One by one, you'd hear the screen door slam. And then the old man would start into operation. He was the only person I knew who programmed his fireworks. He'd start out with a little pinwheel just to get him going. Put this pinwheel up, he'd stand back. He's watching the neighbors. The pinwheel spins, and then they go, ah. You know that universal cry of, oh. That was my father's applause. Then he would, in the darkness, you'd see him down there, and he's picking up a Roman candle. He lights it. And you know, firing a Roman candle, incidentally, how many of you have shot off a Roman candle recently? Do you know what a terrifically soul-warming thing this is? I'd say at least 9 out of 10 guys who are feeding inadequate today, who feel they've lost their masculinity. If I were a psychologist, I would equip them all with a giant Roman candle. I'd say, go out, man, and let it go. Oh, there's nothing like the Roman ka-chung, you know. Shoot one up there towards Saturn, chung, and they go up. In case you don't know what a Roman candle is, a Roman candle is a tube, and it comes in varying lengths. There's little ones, there's big ones, then there's the big time. Really big ones. These go all the way up to 25 shells, and each one of them, you see, has these little balls of fire. The little tiny ones have 4. The next one have 8. And then you have the big babies, you know. You stand out there, whoop, you know. You hold it, you know, like it's got a handle here, and you shoot this thing up. Red, white, and blue. They're always colored red, white, and blue. Well, my father was a magnificent Roman candle man. You could judge the Roman candle shooter by the angle that he would shoot him at, the height that he would get on each arching ball. He could call his shots. And you know, firing a Roman candle is a matter of style. My old man, I can remember him standing like this. Foot in proper position. There's my father, about to let it go. And of course, the neighborhood is just watching him with their eyes big. And there's a little fire at the end of the Roman candle, see? And he would time it. He'd one, you'd see it beat, 2, 3, boom. And everyone would go, ah, he doesn't even watch, you know. 1, 2, 3, boom. 1, 2, 3, choom. And they go arching up over towards Saturn, towards Mars, a red one, a green one, a blue one. And then came that one night, which has become, you know, every family has a legend of the fantastic story. All of your families have stories that you have. You know, these are the little family stories. This has become a Shepherd family legend. In fact, it's an Indiana legend. It really is. The old man has been having a fantastic evening. He sent off 17 skyrockets that went all the way into the Milky Way. He's had pinwheels that were 30 feet across. He's been blowing up Dago bombs. His car was rained 3 counties over, you know. Oh, yeah, you know what? One of these aerial bombs worked like this. You'd light this thing, and believe me, anybody who's been around where they fired a high-velocity, high-explosive aerial bomb is not afraid of nuclear weapons. Yeah, this thing, you'd sit it up, you see. It had a big square piece of wood on the base of it. They were red, white, and blue. They had a red fuse that stuck out about that big. There's a big thing. And it had a little explosive in it. You'd light this thing, the fuse would burn down. Everyone would stand maybe 100 feet away watching this thing. Boy, is that exciting, I'll tell you. It's just laying there. Oh, talk about lethal. Talk about something building up. And you'd see the little sparkling in the dark. You'd see that little red fuse go. And then it would stop. Boy, there's nothing like an aerial bomb that is about to lay an egg. Everybody waits, you know, they're afraid to touch it, see? It stops. And somebody says, wait a minute, give me the plumb, quick. He starts going back, and it's, oh, Jesus. They stand, and there is it laying out there, right in the middle of the street. It would burn down, and there would be a brief pause, like maybe 2 beats. The fuse has disappeared. It would go, 1, 2, and then, boom. Just a little explosion. And you would see a tiny pellet going upward, trailing sparks, higher and higher and higher. And then at the very peak, maybe 75, 100, 200 feet up, this thing would arch over. You'd watch it. And then just at the peak, it would go, boom, There'd be a pause. Boom, boom, boom. Windows would come in. And people are cheering and yelling. I'll tell you, you know, you can't count on fireworks. This is why when I got in the Army later on, I always was afraid of my M1. I always thought one day that thing is going to jump out and bite me, you know. The whole neighborhood is standing there. It's a 3.5-footer, you know. This is one of the big $10 ones. And everybody's standing about 100 feet away, and it goes, boom, up it goes. And we see that pellet going up. It goes higher and higher and higher, and the whole neighborhood is sort of hung in suspension. It went up like this. You never saw more action in your life. It is coming right down on us. You saw feet, guys digging in. Guys digging in, and it hit the ground and bounced twice and rolled in a snowball bush. And incidentally, it rolled in Mrs. Strickland's snowball bush, which doesn't mean anything to you, except Mrs. Strickland was the lady in the neighborhood who always called the cops. You know Mrs. Strickland, you all do. All of you guys that have hit foul balls up on the yard, you know. You know, that screen door bangs open. This old doll was such a fanatic about foul balls hit in her yard. She'd feel the, why are you kids not going to hit any balls up here? And you'd hear the cops coming from miles around. Well, that Dago bomb charge rolled into her prize winning. She had won first prize at the PTA 9 years running with her snowball bushes. It rolled right in there. And here she is in the front bedroom padding, you know, sitting there. You know, it's strictly Grant Wood. And there are three beats, and the entire neighborhood is covered with a thin coating of garlanded roses. Boom! Snowball bushes for miles around. Do you know, to this day, in fact, it appeared in Ripley, they talk about the day that snowball bush blossoms rained in Indianapolis. That was 140 miles south. Well, oh, yeah, you see, that's something they never talk about in connection with fireworks. They never talk about the way people looked at lives in those days. You know, everybody today is so self-involved that most people spend most of their time putting Band-Aids on themselves. Either psychological or psychiatric or physical, you know. A psychologist couldn't have earned $3 a year in Indiana, you know. I mean, they just didn't care. And so the people out there, you'd hear the sound of fireworks going off, punctuated. You'd hear, pew, 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 whee, pew, boom. And then you'd hear, ah! And then, boom, boom. The same family is continuing to fire, you know? The wounded were just brought in and laid out on the porch. The guy's laying there with his hand all blown up, you know? And nobody even worried about it. They could worry about that the 5th of July, you know? You never saw anything like it.
Gene Shepherd will return at 11:05 after Ed Pettit in the news on WOR Radio New York.
You know, now that we're talking about the 4th, the curious thing, I was driving in Wyoming. Now, this was not the 4th of July. This was just an ordinary month in Wyoming. It was like, you know, something like, actually, it was October when I was in Wyoming. And I was driving along, and I stopped at a gas station way out in the absolute flat prairies of Wyoming. And right next to the gas station was a fireworks supermarket. I mean, they were selling fireworks there. you wouldn't believe it. Both fireworks and drunks still exist. And more than that, they are often found together. Now, and the disasters that result, man, are just unparalleled. And to give you an insight into how a short story, the genesis of a short story, where I got the idea from it, well, when I was a teenager, I was a very early teenager, I was about 12 or 13, just beginning my teens, my father, in partnership with another guy, opened up a fireworks stand. It was, an after-work thing. He had another job and all, but they just opened this fireworks stand up. I had to work in it. And it was hot. I mean, it was just a little stand, you know, made out of wood, and it had a little counter, and it had bunting out in the front. You've seen these fireworks stands. Now, I'm one of the rare guys in the world who can say he actually worked in a fireworks stand. Temperature was always like 190 degrees, and we were out on this main highway. And you'd be amazed at the number of drunks. The affinity between drunks and fireworks is fantastic, that practically every third car that would come in to buy fireworks was driven by a guy who was, you know, two-thirds into the wind, and he'd go,
hey, baby, what kind of you got? Hey, look at him. Give me some big round ones.
And of course, these drunks would invariably want the biggest and the toughest stuff. and there I was. I was as a kid, you know, and I'm selling the fireworks. Well, one day, this drunk came up, and they're always showing off. Fireworks invariably, I shouldn't say invariably, but a large number of the times that fireworks are bought involve some guy showing off for a check. I don't know why this is, the connection between fireworks and showing off. So this drunk drove up, and he was driving this great big car, and he was a real, you know, a real drunk type. And he was a big-time spender type, see. So he comes out of the car, and he's got this blonde with him, see. And he wanders over, and he says, hey, that kid, I want some of the really big stuff. And I could smell the gin, and he's curling my hair. And he points to the stuff that was up in the back on the top shelf, which is the biggest stuff you can buy, see, like $4 a shot. It's the kind of stuff that, you know, that local cities would buy for us to use for their 4th of July celebration, you know, at the park. He's pointing to the big ones, you know, boom, the kind that take iron racks to shoot off. See, he says, well, you sure you want that? Yeah, yeah, how about that red, white, and blue one over there? Well, he picks the biggest thing that we had in the house, and he lays down the dough. Well, you know, who am I? I'm a kid. I'm selling the stuff, so I sell it to him. So he gets back in the car with a big bag, you know, a tremendous bag of fireworks. Well, they drive about maybe 200 yards down the road. The car stops, and the guy staggers out of the car, and the chick is sitting in the car watching. See, obviously, I'm going to fire one of these things. Oh, watch this, baby. He climbs out into the weeds there. It's a vacant lot, and he sets this thing up. Well, of course, within 30 seconds, everybody around realized what's going on, but they were too late to do anything about it. The guy lights the thing with his cigar, and he's standing right by it, you know, and people start hollering, look out, look out, and it went off, I want to tell you. Well, it knocked the guy over backwards. Many explosions can do strange things. Explosion is like lightning. It's unpredictable. Well, it blew the body of this guy's shirt right off. The body of his shirt was gone, but the arms still stayed on. He had no shirt, but he had the arms of the shirt on, see? Well, you know, his hair was parted five different ways by this bomb. He goes staggering back into the car. And he drove out down the street. You could see this great big haze of blue smoke hanging over the territory, and bits of his shirt. He was wearing a light blue shirt, and bits of his shirt were scattered over about 200 feet. But I remember the guy getting back in the car. He's going, how do you like that, baby? And his shirt is gone. Just blew it right off. But he still got the sleeves on, which I thought was a fantastic sight. He gets in the car and drives away. No eyebrows, you know, and his hair smoldering. And this sight never left me. And that's the genesis of the short story, Ludlow Kissel and the Dago Bomb That Struck Back. And if you're curious, as I said before, the rest of the story, of course, is in much larger, much more rotund form. And have a good fourth. Watch out, though. And if you believe that fireworks have disappeared from the face of the globe, friend, you're a very innocent person. If you also believe that drunks have disappeared, you're even more of an innocent. Either that or you're a drunk and don't know it. You just like to drink a little, you know. It's all 7 or 8 martinis before dinner. After all, what the hell? I've never heard a guy before, did it? Of course not. Boom! Right through a brick wall with your new Buick. Well, stand up and be counted. Think clean thoughts. And I might say, watch out for the ones with the short red fuses. Those are the mean ones. And even though Flick did prove that you could hold a 5-incher in your hand after it's been lit and survive, that was one of those rare things. Of course, he's never had an elbow since. But stand up. It'll work out. And happy 4th to you.